Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. August always brings a sense of anticipation for teachers preparing for yet another year at school, but nothing can match the challenges facing educators returning to the classroom this fall. The pandemic has placed huge stresses on those in front of students. They must create a learning environment that is safe from a deadly virus. Educators need to protect the students and themselves. But we must not forget all those who are at home. Protecting the students and teachers also protects families. It is a huge responsibility. And as we have seen in reports from around the world, there is plenty of reasons to worry about returning to the classroom. In the face of these great challenges, local teachers are working hard to rise to the occasion. Here is my conversation with Eileen Fletcher, District 14 Vice President of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. It represents high school teachers here in Northumberland. I am so pleased to have with me today Eileen Fletcher, District 14 Vice President of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. It represents the high school teachers here in Northumberland and across the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you very much, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
Ontario Premier Doug Ford said this week that the teachers' unions are constantly attacking the government and are part of the problem in agreeing to a back-to-school plan for the fall. How do you respond to the Premier's comments?
Well, I understand that is a popular position to sort of take in terms of bashing the union. But the reality is that we are just as concerned as the community members within our various regions across the province. The union has actually been very cooperative, and I know locally we have been working collaboratively with our employer to develop a fulsome plan. However, the meetings that we have had with the ministry have been completely unproductive. So we have been asking the questions and asking for the information and asking for the support that's necessary to implement a full safe plan for our schools reopening, and we are not being met with any cooperation from the government.
Your record with the government has been adversarial, and I understand that that's your role, but some people might say, you know, what are you doing to work with the government? The Premier claims that he's given you a lot of what the unions have asked for, better ventilation in the classrooms, more sanitation, access to reserve funds. How do you justify then this adversarial approach rather than his demand for being more cooperative?
Yeah, I don't think we haven't been cooperative. When you look at the Auditor General's report from last November, there were $16.3 billion needed in facility repairs, and that was pre-COVID. The ministry is only offering 3% of that, so $500 million, which barely addresses the backlog that's occurring within the facilities that we have. In addition to that, we didn't settle our contract until we were already into COVID times, and the ministry still insisted on increasing class sizes, which has, been a challenge for us for certain. So yes, there is some money there, but it's grossly inadequate. We're looking at, 7 cents per student in terms of funding, and that's just not going to meet the needs that we have.
All right, so let's now, I know there are concerns that have been raised by both parents and unions about things like physical distancing, class sizes, online versus in-class delivery. So let's take a moment to outline what your union is concerned about in the return this fall.
So I think probably the number one concern we have is that we don't have all of the information that's necessary to ensure that we will meet the needs that are necessary to return to school and feel safe. However, we have worked locally to develop a plan that I think will meet the current standards that we've worked in conjunction with the public health guidelines towards a positive result, and we continue to work as quickly as possible, given the late parameters of the minister's announcement around, what the plans were actually going to be. So we're definitely under a time crunch in terms of meeting the needs.
Okay. So can we be more articulate about what it is you're asking for?
From the ministry?
Or no, from the school board. I understand there's two levels to this.
Okay.
So let's...
Yeah, absolutely. So from the school board, actually the school board has been working very cooperatively with us locally. So we feel that they are meeting many of the needs that we have expressed in terms of developing protocols and procedures that will meet within the ministry parameters, and are providing the personal protective equipment that we have articulated the need for. They are meeting the needs that we have in terms of preparing for instruction and minimizing student contacts and developing a schedule that will meet the needs of our students as well as our teachers.
Okay, so let's break that down even a little bit more, because parents will be listening, and I know you understand what it means, but maybe they don't. So let's talk, first of all, about physical distancing. Are you satisfied that going back, if I was a parent and I'm going to send my kid to high school this fall, is there going to be sufficient physical distancing in the class, in the schools, as far as the union's concerned?
So physical distancing is definitely a challenge. We know that that's going to be problematic. We haven't actually seen the final numbers. So parents were asked to identify whether or not their child was going to be learning from home or coming to school for face-to-face instruction, which we know is the better way to be learning, by this past Wednesday. And so as we start to look at the numbers and review the staffing, we will have a better sense of how many students are actually going to be in any given class. So the numbers as they stand currently are always shifting and changing. So the other thing that I know that the board has made a commitment to is using some of the reserve money that's available in order to increase staffing ratios so that we can start to try and make sure that we're meeting the needs of all those students. Will it be a challenge in some of our subject areas? Absolutely. But when we're talking about health and safety, we're also talking about layers of protection. So the board is providing, you know, personal protective equipment for everyone, for staff. There'll be reusable masks, there'll be face shields, there will be, plexiglass barriers. There are a number of other sort of layers of protection that will be in place for those times when we're unable to physically distance.
All right. Now, what about class sizes? Do you feel there's going to be sufficient attention paid to class sizes? I know the unions have made certain demands. Maybe tell us what your demands are and whether the local board's going to meet that.
So we have been visiting classrooms and looking at the various setups, and some of the furniture setups that we currently have are going to be challenging in terms of meeting those physical distance needs. You know, education had moved forward in a collaborative learning environment. So the classrooms of today look very different than the classrooms of yesteryear, but that's actually where we're going to have to probably redirect so that we're physically situating ourselves in the spaces so that we're not face-to-face, and that sharing, that, you know, we ensure that there's sufficient supplies so that people have their own individual things and they're not sharing. So in terms of, you know, I don't know that I would use the word demand, but in the collaborative conversations we're having with our employer, where there has been a lot of cooperation, a lot of union input as the plans have been developed. So I think that we are in a good position at this time, but still have a lot of work to do before the reopening in September.
Can you talk a bit about the union's feelings around in-class versus online delivery?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, teachers want to be back in the classroom, and we're excited to be back in the classroom and working with our students face-to-face. We know that that's the best way that students learn, and that was really a lot of what our political fight was about last year. So, but as you know, we were forced into a situation where we were doing distance learning. It was unexpected. It was something we were ill-prepared for. So teachers have been working long and hard this summer in order to develop their skills in terms of distance learning and what that can look like, and a traditional e-learning model, only to have the minister announce that we're going to be going into a synchronous learning model which is going to present its own challenges. But when we talk about, you know, face-to-face versus at-home learning, so the ministry has indicated that students will be expected to sit in front of a screen for upwards of 3 to 4 hours at the same time as their teacher in another location. And that has challenges. It certainly challenges the equity issues we have around the ability for students to access from a distance. We know that that was experienced certainly in the spring. And it's not reasonable to expect people to sit in front of a screen. We know that that's not good. All of the health studies indicate that young people should not be spending that much time in front of a screen. So we would be looking to push back a little bit on that in terms of a traditional e-learning model where students are working on the curriculum at their own pace and at a time that best works for them within the school day.
I just want to go over that synchronous and the asynchronous models just so that parents are clear about what we're talking about. So synchronous is when you would be teaching in a classroom and you would have students in front of you there, but there would also be a computer that would be broadcasting the lessons at the same time, and the students at home would be watching from at home and participating from at home. That's a synchronous model. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that's certainly the intention of a synchronous model, and I think what the ministry had in mind. At our board, what we are looking at is actually having dedicated teachers who specifically work with students in the home environment. So one of the challenges with that is that we do have courses, obviously, that are difficult to do through a screen. So we have a lot of hands-on application courses that students will be currently enrolled in, such as, you know, construction or automotive or visual arts or music. And that's difficult to participate through a screen, like to just be sitting in front of a screen and watching your peers participating in those activities is not going to be meaningful. So we need to really reinvent how we're doing courses. So dividing those students out and actually having dedicated teachers who would work with those students to deliver a curriculum that is well adapted to that kind of environment is probably the direction that we will be going in terms of counseling students about what courses they can be doing. The actual schedule that we're looking at has students only tackling two courses during the first 9 weeks of the semester and then an additional two courses in the latter.
How will that be helpful in this situation?
So one of the challenges that was presented to us is that we need to minimize contact of staff and students to 100 direct to indirect contacts. And so a normal class day, you would see three classes. A teacher would see three classes and a student would see four. And that exceeds the number that the health authorities are indicating is recommended. So we have cut the semester into two segments in order to create sort of a quadmester system so that we're limiting the number of people that they're coming in contact with during the day.
Now, have you been getting any calls from your members at all? And how much anxiety is there about going back?
I absolutely have heard from members. And I think that every fall, there's a lot of anxiety around the return to work. But this one is obviously exacerbated by the COVID situation and not having all of the answers yet. It's a lot to process. And there's a lot of work that's still being done. And it's challenging for members to not have all the answers right now. It's, of course, the union's intention, and I know the board's intention, to make sure that those answers are in place before we return to work. Absolutely, members are anxious. And there's a broad spectrum, much like there is in society, of people who are more anxious than others, right, in terms of what's been happening in the media, the conversations that are happening, and the view of how school reopenings are happening around the world, and how is that either going to be the same or different than what happens in our local region.
Do you think parents were given sufficient time to make decisions about their children in school?
I think it's definitely a challenge in terms of the timelines. Unfortunately, some of that was out of our hands with the ministry sort of delaying when they were making a decision about what the fall was going to look like. So getting in, and because we were looking at sort of three various possibilities right up until August 5th, no complete plan could really be developed until the ministry made an actual decision. So, yeah, I think it's short notice for parents, for sure. The good news is that there is flexibility. So once we get into the fall and things start to happen, there is the flexibility there for parents to make an adjustment. It will be a challenge. There will be transitional issues. However, there is an opportunity to change that. And if you look at the KPRs, FAQs for parents in terms of how we're coping with COVID, you'll see that response there.
Let's talk for a moment about the classroom experience. I mean, the board's saying for full-time in-school learning, they're reducing the number of classes per day and they're limiting students and staff contact. And now each class is going to be 2.5 hours long. How does this impact learning from a teaching perspective? 2 and 3 hour lectures? I can certainly attest to holding young people's attention for prolonged periods of time. How are you advising your members, and how are your members responding to these challenges?
Well, as professional educators, you know, obviously we need to be adaptive, and it is going to be a challenge. And some students will tolerate the longer periods better than others. There are some advantages to a longer time period working together in terms of things like, you know, if you're doing science labs, that sort of thing, there are opportunities to sort of expand that learning. In other areas, it will be a challenge, absolutely. But I think that, you know, as professionals, it's our responsibility to make sure that the lessons are engaging, that we're not just standing and delivering sort of a Socratic lesson at the front of the room for 2.5 hours and expecting people to listen. That time frame will be broken up, so there will be a break of about 15 minutes in the middle of the 2.5 hours, so students will still have an opportunity to relax and unfocus before they have to focus again. So that... It will be a challenge, for sure, right? It's like doing two lessons in one day, and the pace of learning will be more challenging for our students. But we know that. We know that going in. It's similar to what happens in summer school when they have a single course all day and we're trying to move through content in a quicker fashion. There's not that same opportunity for passive learning to happen where you absorb ideas over a period of time, right, working in the background in your mind. So it will be a challenge, but I believe that the teachers, through their, you know, various professional organizations as well, subject associations, are coming up with creative solutions to address this need.
Now, on social media and in conversation, I've heard some people say that teachers should just, if you'll pardon the phrase, suck it up. Many others have worked on the front lines of the pandemic since the beginning. I mean, grocery store workers, truck drivers, nurses, doctors, and many others. Now, how do you respond to those kinds of comments and critics?
Well, you know, teaching and education has always had risks that are associated with it, right? Like, in education, we have been exposed to violence, we have been exposed to a variety, and obviously the reason we were distressed when we lost our sick days is because we are traditionally exposed to physical health issues or on a regular basis. I think the concern really is how is this different in terms of the number of contacts and the facilities that are available to us. So, you know, we don't have medical grade PPE. We don't necessarily know who is entering our buildings, and so that's going to be a challenge in terms of creating, you know, protocols and procedures that will limit access to certain areas of the school. You know, I think that there are, education is really important, and we know that, and we know that our job is to serve our communities and to meet the educational needs for the future of the province of Ontario through our students. I think, though, that we want to make sure that we're at least meeting the minimum standards in terms of keeping people safe. We want our students to be safe. There is that in the Occupational Health and Safety Act, the general duty clause, to take every precaution reasonable in the circumstances to protect the worker. And so just like we've always developed protocols and procedures to deal with the other risks that we take as educators, we want to make sure that every possible precaution has been taken. And I think that anyone would say that that's a reasonable request.
Would the union hold a strike or a job action to halt the return?
That is certainly not something that we've been discussing at this time.
All right. If you could sit down with the students and with the parents and talk to them right now, what would you like to say to them?
I think I would say that I recognize and understand how anxious they are, and that teachers are going to do what they do best. As teachers, they're going to educate, and that it really is a personal decision in terms of whether or not you want to continue your learning from home or in school. We recognize and understand that face-to-face is the best opportunity for students to be learning. We think that there's a lot of important learning that happens in a casual way within the interactions that happen in the classroom as opposed to just book learning. My hope is, of course, that we will see students coming back to our building and that we'll be able to start doing what we do best, which is teaching. And all we can do is hope that the answers that are being provided by the board are sufficient in order to make them feel comfortable and safe. We are certainly going to be ready as teachers to teach your child regardless of the format that that's going to occur in. It will be worthwhile.
Eileen Fletcher, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today.
You're more than welcome, Rob. It was a pleasure.
That was my conversation with Eileen Fletcher, District 14 Vice President of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. I want to thank both my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. Or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.